is in this neighborhood and all neighborhoods of the city to be safe. And I want criminals to know that we're looking for you.
Milwaukee Police Chief Ed Flynn says he currently has enough staff to watch all the monitors, but eventually may have to assign more officers who are unable to be on street patrol. Chuck Quernbach, Wisconsin Public Radio.
Governor Walker is releasing his first television ad in the governor's race, pushing back against Democratic challenger Mary Burke's message that unemployment has gone up under his watch. The Republican incumbent launched his first ad on the same day that Burke was running her initial spot. Unemployment was 7.8% when Walker took office. It is 6.3% now. In the weather forecast for tonight, partly to mostly cloudy with a chance of light rain and snow in southern Wisconsin, otherwise lows in the single digits. Tomorrow, mostly clear with highs in the mid to upper 20s, and on Sunday, partly cloudy with highs in the mid 30s to around 40. This is Wisconsin Public Radio News. I'm Noah Ovshinsky.
Support for WPR comes from our contributing members. Your investment brings insightful news and thought-provoking programs to your radio every day. Thank you for making WPR a powerful resource in Wisconsin and beyond.
Wisconsin Public Radio is everywhere. On the radio, online, on demand, on your smartphone, on the way to work, on your mind. Go to WPR.org and turn it on.
It's 5:06, and you're listening to Central Time on the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. I'm Veronica Rickert.
And I'm Rob Ferret. Coming up, campaign ads and the race for governor are on the air. Both major party candidates went to the airwaves, and we'll find out what they're saying and why they're saying it 8 months ahead of Election Day.
First, just over a year ago, the Milwaukee Journal-Sentinel started an investigation of the law enforcement activities of the ATF. The Federal Bureau of Alcohol, Tobacco, Firearms, and Explosives. Reporters found evidence of mistakes and questionable tactics in a sting operation, from a military-style machine gun lost on the streets to a brain-damaged man pressured into buying guns and then charged with a felony.
The story is ongoing, with ATF officials testifying last month before a congressional committee led by Wisconsin Representative Jim Sensenbrenner. To bring us up to date, we have John Diedrich, reporter for the Milwaukee Journal-Sentinel. He's been working on the Backfire series over the last year. John, welcome to the show.
Thank you.
What first tipped you off about the ATF's activities in Milwaukee?
Well, in late 2012, I received a tip that ATF agent's guns had been stolen. You alluded to this at the beginning. They were stolen from his vehicle that was parked outside a coffee shop here in Milwaukee. I checked in with the ATF. They asked us to hold off on disclosing that information, which we did for a couple months, checking in with them periodically. And then we heard from a landlord who described how he had unwittingly rented to the ATF for this for a storefront operation, and how they had damaged his property and refused to pay for it, along with high utility bills and other costs.
So this storefront sting operation was what looked like a business called Fearless Distributing. What was the ATF doing having this fake business in Milwaukee?
Well, as we came to find out, this is a tactic that's been used, a technique across the country by the ATF. The idea is that you set up phony businesses. In this case, it was a store that sold clothing, drug paraphernalia, things of that nature. But it's all wired up, so they're videotaping everything. The people behind the counter are undercover ATF agents, and their real aim is to get individuals to bring them guns, illegal guns, crime guns, and also narcotics. And so they set up in the River West neighborhood in Milwaukee, which is on the near east side, just over the river, in a fairly quiet neighborhood, not a high crime area. And their cover story was that they were a gang from New York, and that they were buying these guns and shipping them back east.
So what was the goal of this nationwide operation? Who were they hoping that they would sweep up here and arrest?
Well, so this has been going on at least going back to 2005, 2004. We found operations as far back, and we're told that these have gone on perhaps even before that. The idea, according to ATF, is to target violent individuals who would traffic in guns and narcotics and take them off the street. What we found in our reporting, other than a lot of the missteps that we found that you alluded to, is that this technique tended to attract individuals who were not high up the sort of food chain, if you will, of criminal activity. So they, for instance, would bring in people who were who did have felonies in their background and cannot possess guns, but might just be bringing in guns to make a few dollars. Or, as we found, they were paying such high prices that individuals were able to get other individuals to buy guns from stores such as Gander Mountain and turn around and make a very tidy profit with money that the ATF would pay.
Along the way, you focused on the story of Chauncey Wright, one of the people caught up in this. And I'd like, if you would, to tell his story, how he got into this and what happened to him.
Sure. So at the beginning of the operation, one of the things that the agents were trying to do was to get the word out that they were open for business and that they were interested to have people come to the store. One of the ways they were doing this was handing out flyers at a Walmart that's near the store in River West area in Milwaukee. At that store, they ran into Chauncey Wright. Chauncey Wright is a young man in his mid-20s. He has a very low IQ, an IQ that is measured in to be 54. The way Chauncey ended up being in the situation that he is he nearly died as an infant. He slipped under the water in a bathtub. It was unattended for a period of time, and his brain was without oxygen. Reads at a six-year-old level. He didn't go into high school. He's had a hard time keeping a job and so forth. He does have a felony on his record prior to meeting them, and that was for selling small amounts of cocaine on the street. And so what happens is he goes to these individuals and says, hey, can I get a job with you? And they said, sure, that'd be great. And so he starts handing out flyers, and then he starts working at the store. All the while, people close to Chauncey, including his grandmother, his girlfriend, his brother, and others, are saying, there's something not right about this store. It's really on a dead-end street. It's not the kind of place that you would think of. And what Chauncey kept saying to them is he said, you know, these are my guys. They're looking out for me. And what they're doing in the meantime is they're paying Chauncey to work at the store in cigarettes and merchandise from the store and also cash. And what happens after a little while is they start telling Chauncey, hey, can you get us guns? We want to get guns and drugs and so forth. And so that's what he starts to do. And he starts acting as a middleman for a number of these transactions. And then in the end, he ends up getting arrested, of course, with everyone else. He has no idea what this is. And he ends up going into the federal court system. When they learn about his IQ, he ends up having a modified plea agreement, but he is convicted, and he ended up with a sentence of probation.
And this isn't the only case. You looked at other operations around the country. This isn't the only case where agents locally latched onto somebody with a low IQ, somebody in Chauncey's situation, pressured them to buy guns, and then arrested them for it.
That's right. And just a little bit of background, how we ended up taking the investigation outside of Milwaukee is we found out all these problems, the stolen gun, including the machine gun, which remains unrecovered, Chauncey Wright's story, and there's a myriad of other problems that happened in Milwaukee. After our investigation came forth, congressional members started asking questions, and ATF assured congressional members that this was an isolated situation and that it was really a problem in Milwaukee that they were going to address. So our investigation looked out to other cities to say, is this true? And we found individuals in other cities, in four other cities, where individuals that had a low IQ were used by the operation to promote the operation in a way. For instance, there was a man in Portland, Oregon. He came in and he has a low IQ, and he was convinced, along with another man, by the ATF to get a tattoo on their neck with the logo of the fake storefront, which is a large squid smoking a joint on their neck. It took 3 hours to get the tattoo on. It runs from his ear down to his shoulder, paid for with tax dollars. There was a man in Wichita, Kansas, very similar to Chauncey, who was hired to work at the store. He was paid in cigarettes. He was, like Chauncey, riding his bike around, promoting the store, handing out flyers and so forth. His grandmother, very similar, said, this is Tony Brunner, says, this is not something you should be involved with, Tony. And same thing, he ends up getting charged in the end. And there's a similar story from Pensacola, Florida, and from Albuquerque, New Mexico.
As this story emerged and as the bad apple idea maybe was tossed away as these other cases around the country came up, what is the ATF, what have prosecutors said as far as success? Can they point toward any upside of these operations?
Yes, and you know, we pointed out in our investigation that there were individuals in the Milwaukee operation, for instance, and in these other operations as well, who got substantial sentences. What we didn't see in the Milwaukee operation was evidence that somebody like a gang leader or a large criminal enterprise was taken down. It was individuals who had continued to engage in criminal activity, and under the federal court system, that's going to get you some time, a substantial amount of time in prison. But the ATF, in congressional testimony last week and so forth, they've clearly acknowledged that they've got some serious shortcomings in these operations, and that they've issued a manual. They didn't have a manual before on how to run these, and they have a whole bunch of stringent rules that they say will help alleviate this or prevent this from happening. But they do point to the fact that, you know, we had so many individuals arrested and so many guns seized and so forth. But what we don't really know looking at those numbers, and at first, they seem very impressive, and that's what they have at the end of these operations is often a press conference laying out the guns and so forth. So you don't know where those guns came from. For instance, how many of those guns came from a store, as they did in Milwaukee, a number of the guns, not all of them, but a number of the guns came directly from stores. And how many of the individuals, were involved in operations that were maybe not – offenses that were not that serious. For instance, in Portland, Oregon, they situated the store directly across the street from a middle school. Well, what that allowed them to do was, and they said later that that was a mistake, but the fact remained that that allowed the prosecutor to charge all the individuals in state court and also to seek enhancements in federal court for being within 1,000 feet of a school. You know, that's a safe zone, and federal laws supposed to keep guns away. The ATF has said that was a mistake, along with a number of other things. But they're standing by the technique, but they're acknowledging that there are a lot of mistakes and shortcomings.
We're talking to Milwaukee Journal Sentinel reporter John Diedrich about his Backfire series on ATF sting operations in Milwaukee and elsewhere in the nation.
You can join the conversation with your questions and your reactions to his series and what he's talking about here today. Are you hoping to see more oversight of the ATF? Call 1-800-642-1234. That's 1-800-642-1234. Or you can email talk@WPR.org.
We'll pick up the story after this look at some of the latest news with Noah Ovshinsky.
Conservatives who are gathered for a conference near Washington have heard from another possible presidential candidate, Republican Senator Rand Paul of Kentucky, who told them that President Barack Obama is running roughshod over Americans' civil liberties. Earlier today, former Senator Rick Santorum told the gathering that Republicans lose elections when they nominate moderate candidates. Stocks have finished mixed at the end of an indecisive day of trading. Investors are still worried about escalating tension in Ukraine, and that dampened some of the optimism created by this morning's jobs report. The government said far more jobs were created in February than in either of the two preceding months. And the Wisconsin Department of Natural Resources and the Conservation Congress have formed a new fishing advocacy group. The Wisconsin Fisheries Advisory Council will advise the DNR's Fisheries Management Board and the Congress on statewide issues ranging from long-term fisheries plan to balancing anglers' competing interests. The first council meeting is set for March 29th near Stevens Point. For Central Time, I'm Noah Ovshinsky.
Hi, it's us, Click and Clack the Tapper Brothers.
If you're still driving a big SUV, you know that filling up that gas tank can be painful.
Yeah, your tank's only half full, and you've exceeded the limit on your credit card.
Well, we can help. Donate your old gas hog through the Car Talk Vehicle Donation Program.
Your donation will help this station pay for your favorite programs, and you'll get a tax deduction.
And here's how it works. Call 1-866-789-8627 or go to WPR.org.
Wisconsin Public Radio is a service of the Wisconsin Educational Communications Board and the University of Wisconsin Extension, with additional financial support from the Corporation for Public Broadcasting and from listeners through the Wisconsin Public Radio Association.
Take Wisconsin Public Radio on the go wherever you go. Listen to our live broadcasts, our archived programs, and the latest from WPR News. Go to WPR.org/mobile app to download.
This is Central Time. I'm Rob Verrett.
And I'm Veronica Rickert. We're continuing our conversation with John Dietrich of the Milwaukee Journal Sentinel. And we're talking about Backfire, his investigative series on the Bureau of Alcohol, Tobacco, Firearms, and Explosives, and the sting operations it ran in Milwaukee and elsewhere.
You can join with your questions and your reactions at 800-642-1234. That's 800-642-1234. Or email talk@WPR.org. To your calls in just a minute, John, but first I want to get into some of the mistakes you found. First, you mentioned the lost machine gun. Can you talk about what happened?
Yeah, what happened in that case was the ATF agent, the chief undercover agent, left his car with these guns in the back. We're told that they were in a lockbox in the back of the truck. They were two handguns, government-issued handguns, and then fully automatic weapon. And the reason for that is this individual is on an entry team, so that's why he would have such a weapon. Those three weapons were stolen, the ATF actually bought back one of its own weapons the day after this at the storefront. But those other two guns, despite much searching, remain at large. And it is great concern because that kind of weapon, the machine gun, poses a great risk to law enforcement. The other missteps in Milwaukee include the operation itself was burglarized, and the thieves made off with nearly $40,000 worth of merchandise. That was because the ATF had neglected to have a burglar alarm on the store. They left behind sensitive law enforcement documents. These documents included the names of undercover agents, their actual names, their cell phone numbers, their vehicle types, the takedown signs that that law enforcement uses, so something that they wouldn't want certainly out in the public. They also arrested four of the wrong people during the roundup, including one man who was already in prison on an ATF charge. At the time, those cases were quickly disposed of. And there was an individual who, a felon, who was allowed to leave the store. He was with a gun. And this was an individual who was threatening to shoot somebody, to do harm to somebody, because his cousin had been shot. And they didn't have takedown cars outside for this sort of thing. And that was another shortcoming that the ATF has identified as to, what needs to change in the future, is that they didn't have, some sort of basic planning and safety measures in place.
We'll go to our callers now. We have James on the line in Milwaukee. James, hi.
Hi there. I just had a couple of quick questions. I was just wondering if there's any way for legislation to be able to control this and rein this in, or if there's any pending legislation. I'm not sure what kind of control could be put on it. The other thing I was wondering was, what was the cost of the Milwaukee operation? And, just wondering relative to the amount of heinous criminals that were apprehended.
Great. Thanks for the call. John, let's take that last one first. Do we have a notion of what this cost?
We do not. And that was something that we and members of Congress have been asking for more than a year for an itemization of what the costs were, not just the amount that was paid for the weapons, but also the agent's time, the rent. Agents came from out of town, so there was per diem costs and housing costs and things of that nature. That's one of the questions that members of Congress had, not only about the Milwaukee operation, was elsewhere. And the question is, was it worth it? What was the dollar amount that was spent, and was it worth it for what the cases were that were generated? To the first question on legislation, members of Congress from both parties, this is one of those issues that has really touched a nerve in both parties. want answers on this. And, you know, the question of whether it's legislation or just oversight, what is really troubling to these members of Congress, Tammy Baldwin and James Sensenbrenner, for instance, are both asking questions, Wisconsin Democrat and Republican, are, you know, how is this happening in light of the fact that the ATF has just gone through this major scandal known as Fast and Furious, where guns walked into, that's the term of art, but walked into Mexico while agents were observing that. And there were supposed to be a whole bunch of reforms in place to prevent this. Yet, you know, here we have this operation coming right after that in Milwaukee and other places. And that's partially what the Inspector General from the Department of Justice is looking at. And so what we're hearing right now is there has been a congressional hearing. There's going to be another one. The Inspector General who works for the Department of Justice is looking into it. And what I'm hearing from members of Congress is they want to hear not only what that investigation finds, but what the hearing, the next hearing, will prove and will bring forward in terms of answers from ATF.
Back to the phones now. We have Peg with us in West Milwaukee. Peg, hi.
Hi. I would like to ask what kind of disciplinary action was taken against the agents involved and their supervisors. And I'm going to hang up and listen.
Peg, thanks. John, consequences for agents involved or people involved in planning these operations?
Another great question. This is something that we've been asking about, and members of Congress, it sounds like a broken record, but for more than a year we've been asking this. Okay, so here's what we know is the agent that was in charge of the operation has been transferred to Washington. They will not characterize that as whether that was a punitive move or if that was maybe a promotion. We don't know. The undercover agent whose guns were lost, he has since been transferred elsewhere. The one thing that we had heard was a punitive move, and this was told to members of Congress, is that there's an individual who was working out of the St. Paul office, and St. Paul has jurisdiction over Milwaukee. That individual was promoted shortly after this operation, and then he was demoted. And so initially it looked like, okay, well, here's the punishment coming down. It's a gentleman by the name of B.J. Zaper. But what happened in his case is he was promoted, but then when he was demoted, he was put in charge of the Phoenix office of all places. That's where Fast and Furious took place. And it appears to be a move of convenience, because if he is going to retire and he's close to that age, that's an area that he's lived before, perhaps has property and relations there and so forth. And so it doesn't look like much of a punishment at this point, but that's an open-ended question. And frankly, that's one of the questions that ATF top officials did not answer when they were on the Hill. And I know that members of Congress want that. When Todd Jones, who is the director now, and he's the full confirmed director, the agency hadn't had one for a long time, now they do. That, I know, will be a question that will be asked of him when he comes up to the Hill.
John, something just occurred to me. Did the ATF coordinate with local law enforcement in these operations, or at least let them know they were there and what they were doing?
They did. There were two Milwaukee police officers who were embedded, if you will, in the operation. And there were questions, and this is one of the reforms that they've had, is that they need to make sure that they coordinate well with all their local partners. But the latest reform that they mentioned last week, I should say that they also said they have these stringent rules, yet they haven't, none of these operations are actually happening now nationwide. So they've in effect shut them down nationwide for the time being. But one of the rules that they're going to have now is that they need to have a local law enforcement partner, say the Milwaukee Police Department or a sheriff's office somewhere or whatever, to ask them, to invite them to come in and do this kind of operation. But, you know, that was one of the questions, talking to my sources. I've covered law enforcement here for a decade, is, you know, there was a lot of suspicious things going on. You know, was there enough notice given to other law enforcement to make sure there wasn't a problem? And that's especially true when you have individuals who are talking about felons who are talking about doing harm to somebody being allowed to leave with a gun. Now, I should say we don't know what that if that individual did shoot somebody. That has never been that's not in any report, but we do know that gun has not been recovered in Milwaukee.
John, we'll leave it there, but I'm hoping we can have you back on as the story develops further. Thanks for joining us today.
Thank you. I'd be happy to come back.
That was Milwaukee Journal Sentinel reporter John Diedrich talking about his investigative reporting on ATF sting operations in Milwaukee.
Coming up, campaign ad season is here as both major candidates hit the airwaves with commercials. We'll hear what they're saying and whether it will be effective. I'm Veronica Rickert.
And I'm Rob Ferret. Stick around. There's more to come on Central Time on the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio.
This is Wisconsin Public Radio News. Good evening. I'm Noah Ovshinsky. Several Republican-led election bills are moving through the legislature as it moves into the final 2 weeks before the end of the session. The Wisconsin State Journal reports that 8 of the 15 election-related bills have Democratic support, but a spokesman for Republican Senate Majority Leader Scott Fitzgerald says the fate of 4 other elections-related bills is unknown. One proposal would limit in-person absentee voting to between 8 a.m. and 7 p.m.